This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with Jim, Steve, Fish, and former two-time Gold Glover World Series champion, Benji Molina.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored!
Smith corks one into right down the line! It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Clover's there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, Cardinals fans, and welcome to this week's edition of Ruffled Feathers right here on Two Birds on a Bat. We're coming to you from the Patio Studios. Patio is the original party place for St. Louis Cardinals fans everywhere. Since 1998, pre or post game, Patio's is the place to be. And it looks like we'll all be back there and back at it in about a month. This show is brought to you by Innovative Companies, with a special thanks to our good friend Randy Green. Residential, commercial, or industrial, Innovative Companies has you covered. Don't forget the 15% discount for all military and first responders. The construction, electrical, or heating and cooling teams are ready to tackle any project. That's our good friends at innovatedcompanies.com. Okay, Cardinals fans, and I guess baseball fans in general, it looks like we're finally getting the game back. And it's been a rough road, to say the least. But we've got news as of last night that the Major League Baseball is implementing a 60-game schedule. And here to talk about that with me is senior baseball writer for The Athletic. He covers the St. Louis Cardinals, Mark Saxon. Mark, thank you so much for taking a few minutes this afternoon to talk to me and to talk to us here at Two Birds on a Bat. And you've been probably a little busy.
Yeah, of late, unfortunately, not busy enough for a while, right? I mean, like the rest of us, there was just nothing going on. And I think because, you know, I work at The Athletic, we have Ken Rosenthal and Evan Drellich and Jason Stark to do the national stuff. So I really, you know, wasn't involved with tracking down ownership sources or player sources to kind of get their reaction to all this back and forth. But like you, I'm just kind of in a position now. You know, it's kind of like the players said, when and where we'll be there to cover it. We'll be there to watch it. And it sounds like they're making finally like a real good faith effort to get baseball on the field. And we'll see if the virus cooperates, but that's kind of fun. Right. And so let's try and concentrate on the positive part. Mm-hmm. And that's that we're all going to get to watch baseball soon.
Yeah, we've had several weeks now of you know, doing these shows and a couple others that I do where it's been a very different tone, more one of frustration, as you can imagine. We're all frustrated. You know, we want the game back, and we'd love to see the two sides cooperate. And this is probably what we're getting is probably a little bit of a prelude to what we could get after the 21 season when they have to come to the table again. I don't want to go that far right now. But what I want to ask you, Mark, is they're going to get 60 games within 66 days. And I think tentatively they're looking at the weekend of the 24th of July for play to begin. That's in a month. And I know these guys are going to need some time to get back within the flow, knock a little bit of rust off. But you'd have to think a lot of them were keeping up with it somewhat. But it's a month. That's longer than what I would have thought. But you know more than me. You're around this all the time.
Well, yeah. So what they're going to do, players are expected to return. You know, this is assuming that this thing gets finalized. And perhaps by the time people are listening to it, that will be the case. I think it will be the case. But players are going to be expected to show up at their respective training camps around July 1st. And that in itself is quite a challenge. You think of the Cardinals, who have a few players in Mexico. They have some players in the Dominican Republic. They have players in California. Getting all those guys in, making sure they're healthy, making sure there's no positive tests, and then choreographing these workouts at Busch Stadium. And then for another 15 guys, it'll be at AA Springfield's ballpark, a few hours drive away. So that's what they're going to try to do. It's a very complicated operation when you think about it, keeping everybody healthy through all that. And, you know, John Mozeliak today on a conference call was pretty explicit about that. He said, look, we're going to try and keep these guys in a bubble to the extent we can, but there's only so much we can control. And so that's what everybody is looking at right now. I don't worry so much about players anymore on the conditioning side. I mean, if you look at the shape that players are in now versus when I started to cover baseball in 1998, when a lot of them still showed up to camp to get in shape, now they come in shape, they're really getting in baseball shape. So I think it'll be more about the pitchers and building up some sort of endurance so that, you know, they're not limited to 75, 80 pitches in real baseball games, because nobody wants to see an endless succession of relievers coming into the games, but that could be what the early season games look like, I think.
The recession of relievers that have to stay in for at least three batters. In trying to cram 60, you know, with only 60 games to go, there's not a lot of runway for guys to get to stretch out, right? So you certainly want to see that linger on for too long. I mean, gosh, you blink and half of what's left of the season is going to be gone. So, I can't believe that. And I don't even know how this impacts any kind of trade deadline, if even one exists, because typically, right, a week later is a non-waiver trade deadline. That's actually is the only deadline now. So I'm not sure what's going on with that, Mark. Any insight there? Is it still a thing that's there, or is it being moved? Or I'm not really sure how that's working.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's going to be July 31st. I mean, 1 week or a matter of days, you know, to figure out your trade. And frankly, I don't think there's going to be any appetite for trades that early, because teams really are not in great position, great footing and financially, right? So they're not going to maybe want to take on those players initially. I would think they would have some kind of a trade deadline. We really haven't. I have not seen any mention of it anywhere in terms of the major national reporters chiming in on that. I'd be curious to see what the ideas are. You know, let's say it were midseason. Would that put us somewhere maybe August 31st kind of thing? I don't know, but you know, it's a big draw for baseball. It's a positive for baseball, much like the winter meetings. Mm-hmm. It gets people talking. It gets them excited. It gets Cardinals fans with the perpetual Nolan Arenado questions, right? And it gets Dodgers fans talking about whoever their obsession is. So I think they're going to try to create that excitement toward midseason. And I think that'll be interesting. And maybe if the Cardinals are struggling, you don't have a lot of time to really let yourself struggle. I mean, if you're in a 2-week kind of funk, you might make a desperation move to get a guy at that point. And if you're a team like the Cardinals with expectations to go to the playoffs and try to win the World Series. So I think it could create quite a frenzy and something interesting eventually, presuming teams again have the financial appetite to take on players with salary.
Yeah, 60 games is still one to try to, you know, I'm trying at least to wrap my head around. So it sounds like also the DH is very much a question mark. And I don't know how you feel about or how you felt about the DH coming to the National League. And, you know, what we heard was it's possible that it's even there for 21. And I've always felt that once it arrives in the National League, even under these extreme conditions, I don't think it's going to go. I think it'll actually stay. What's your opinion?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point. But everything we're hearing right now is that MLB and the players have agreed to the universal DH for the 2020 season. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's kind of off the table for 2021, at least for now, although maybe even that could be renegotiated. But it would be strange to sort of play this way this year and then suddenly go back next year and then again revert to a DH in 2022. But the fact is the players want it. The owners want it. They want it for different reasons, but they both want it. And just finding something that they can agree on at all these days is kind of a challenge. So it's going to stick. We're going to not see pitchers hitting very soon. You know, I'm weirdly agnostic on it just from a kind of aesthetics of the game, because I did cover the American League for a long time. Mm-hmm. I didn't miss watching pitchers up there trying to hit. And I do think there, people talk about the strategy aspect as if there's no strategy in the American League, but I think what some baseball people who like American League baseball would argue is a manager has to have a little bit better sense of his pitcher's mechanics and how he's holding up with the pitch count, mm-hmm. Than they might in the National League, where it'd just be this automatic double switch or this automatic, pinch hit appearance in the sixth inning. For most of your pitchers, you might have to have a better sense of kind of how he's actually performing, because that's really the only question to answer. So it is going to go away, and it's, you know, I do feel bad about, you know, for people who are staunchly against it, but there were people who were staunchly against it in 1973 when it got put in the American League. And I doubt that those people still feel the same way. So I would caution people, maybe just stay open-minded, watch it for a while and see how you like it.
Well, I think if you look at anything else that's changed in this game, Mark, we've gotten used to the changes. I wasn't
right.
A particular fan of regular in-season interleague play when it first happened, because I kind of liked, mm-hmm. I liked how the National League and American League didn't face in a meaningful way until the very end. And it was kind of, mm-hmm. It was mysterious because, you know, in those days, God, listen to me. Back in those days, you didn't really, you know, you didn't follow the American League as much as you did your local team. And so you didn't know a lot about them. And heck, even in 1985, I didn't know a lot about the Royals. I did once we got there. And so I liked that mystery. But you know what? Just a season or two into it, I think we were used to it and I was okay with it now. And, you know, we get things like, you know, somebody like Albert Pujols gets a chance to return late in his career to St. Louis. And if it weren't for interleague, that wouldn't have happened. So there's definitely some positives that have come out of it. And again, like any other change, I think it's something we get used to and we move on.
Yeah, that's right. And if you use Pujols as an example too, I mean, think of some of the milestones that he'll be able to reach, you know, in his career, because right. The Angels can use him at DH. Same thing with Edgar Martinez and Frank Thomas and some of these great hitters who have been able to do more special things, I think, because of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why the players are so staunchly for the DH. It's an extra well-paying job for a veteran guy who maybe can't play the field any longer or right. plays it very poorly. So that's why the players want it. The owners don't particularly like sending up $30 million pitchers to hit to the plate where they're sort of susceptible to inside fastballs and other things. So that's where they kind of come along. But you're right. I mean, you do get used to it. I think about, you know, I was a kid in the 70s here in St. Louis, and boy, I knew nothing about the American League then.
Right.
You know, it was just that weird league where the umpires wore like the burgundy sport coats and wore the outside chest protector. And it was just a strange, you know,
I forgot about that.
I didn't follow the Red Sox and Yankees, none mm-hmm. of that. So, yeah, you do get used to it. And now when the Cardinals play the Royals, it's actually a pretty good time. And when the Yankees play the Mets, it's a good time. So you're right. I think that's the DH kind of falls into there. Some people will curse us both for being so accepting of it, but that's where we are.
Well, the way I see it is it's inevitable. So I'm that way in life. Just rip the Band-Aid off. If you're going to do it, just do it. And let's get it over with. Let's move on. We actually, speaking of DH, so we got a question sent in to us here, and it comes to us on the Patterson Tire and Service text line, which allows us to hear from you, the fans. Please give our friends at Patterson Tire and Service an opportunity for your business. Patterson Tire and Service is a whole lot more than a tire store, as they also specialize in automotive repair. Give them a call at 618-797-6711 for a quick quote and set up an appointment to head on down to 3718 Highway 111 in Granite City, Illinois, to find out why they're the best in the business. That's Patterson Tire and Service, a whole lot more than a tire store. So this question came to us, and since it has everything to do with the DH, I'm going to throw it to you. So I'm going to read it. It's from Chase Schumacher, and he says, "Hey, Ron, I was getting caught up on the two birds on a bat with the episode you brought up Yasiel Puig. My only thought was, if the DH is here and other teams around getting better. Why wouldn't we want him if you don't even have to play him defensively? Just something to think about. Keep up the great work. And that comes from Chase Schumacher. Thank you for the question. But instead of me answering, I definitely have an opinion on this. But while we've got Mark on here, I wanted to throw this at you, Mark, because you also, I think, retweeted an article. It was a post from MLBTradeRumors.com. I saw you retweet it. Puig's still available. So what are your thoughts on that question?
Well, it's kind of strange for me to hear this notion of using a DH, because when I covered him on the Dodgers when he was coming up, I mean, he was a really dynamic defensive player. He's a great arm, and he's got tremendous mobility, certainly for a right fielder. You could even put him in center field and not, he wouldn't embarrass himself. But that was then. I guess his skills have deteriorated to the point where people are talking about him as a DH. But I'd be very, very surprised if any team signed Yasiel Puig for that role. I just don't know that his personality, some of the things that he brings off the field, if teams view him as being worth it. He's a challenging personality. I can tell you that from having been around players who are around him in LA. He's a guy who likes a lot of attention. He's a very loud personality, and it can be distracting at times. And just more generally, I asked John Mozeliak just really about 45 minutes ago on a conference call whether they would think about, you know, adding a DH type via trade. And he said, you never say never, but right now we're very fixated on getting some of these extra outfielders at bats because we're intrigued by them. And we all know the names, right? Lane Thomas and you know, Tyler O'Neill, if he's not starting, you know, Dylan Carlson, the top prospect. And he also mentioned Rangel Ravelo, who I think has some good power and would have been really just completely blocked by Paul Goldschmidt, who likes to play a lot of games. So yeah, there's some guys who would get DH at bats, but largely I do think they're going to use a lot of Matt Carpenter there. And I could see him thriving there. And in some ways he has a very American League approach in terms of kind of a three true outcomes kind of an approach. And I could see that playing well there. And frankly, I think Tommy Edman at his age and everything is probably a little better third baseman. So I really don't expect them to patch that hole via trade.
Yeah. And I completely agree with you. And that's one of the things I thought of is, well, one, I don't know if you would assign him as just strictly be a DH. Look at who you potentially have in the outfield right now. We know because of the contract situation, Dexter Fowler is going to get at least a shot at having a majority of the playing time in one of the corner outfield positions. And Puig's a much better defender. I don't know if you agree or disagree, but I would think Puig has a lot more upside as a defender than Dexter Fowler does at this point in his career.
And I certainly think so.
And I would think that if you have if you get the benefit of having a DH this year, yes, I completely agree. I could see Carpenter getting the lion's share of that spot in the order. So you can get not only Tommy Edman's bat in the lineup, but you can get his glove over at third base. And then you've got your outfield pretty much, intact. And there are some moving pieces right there, which leads me to Dylan Carlson. Just your overall impression. I was going to ask you, as you went through camp before everything came to a halt, what were you seeing? How did you think that the outfield was going to start to shape up? Because for me, Mark, I'm not that interested in spring training typically, but I really was this year because I was so fascinated by these young outfielders and what this competition was going to be like.
Yeah, for me, spring training is always about, how these young guys who may be on the cusp of their first opportunity are handling it, how the team is evaluating them. And Dylan Carlson, as a young player, I would describe as extremely high floor, especially for a high school pick position player, which probably has the most volatility of any kind of draft commodity you would think of, because he's just got a tremendous baseball IQ. I did a story this spring, talking to people who knew him way back in his high school years and his father. And, he came from a factory at Elk Grove High School, and his dad was the coach. And he just has a really highly advanced style of play about him. He's got a really good plate discipline for his age. He can play the outfield. He's got a very good arm. There were teams looking at him as a pitcher in high school. So a lot of tools there. Do I think that he's a lock to be a 35 home run guy or a perennial all-star? No, which is why I would say for me right now, I see a higher floor than in terms of, I don't know that there's an off the charts ceiling for him, as there would be, like an Eloy Jimenez or somebody like that, or a Juan
Juan Soto or Acuna. This is a guy who you know, you never know, but you certainly think is going to be an everyday major league player. Is he that perennial all-star is the question. But, you know, given the Cardinals' difficulty at times of kind of producing that sort of next level talent position player since Albert Pujols, he's probably the most exciting player we've seen in 6 or 7 years, certainly since Oscar Tavares, until Nolan Gorman maybe becomes that guy. So tremendous excitement. It was trending, I think, toward the end of spring training as him probably starting the season at AAA, just because of some of the other names we mentioned. And if you kind of read between the lines of playing time and spring training, he was starting to get phased back a little bit. But now, does that change with a roster that it looks like will start the season at 30 players at the major league level plus a taxi squad? I'd be shocked if he wasn't one of those 30 guys right now. And I don't know. I mean, this notion of his service time, well, maybe they will have some kind of marker this season where it makes more sense to wait a few weeks or a month to activate him. But it's hard for me to imagine that he's not one of the 30 best players in the organization. And if there's a ring to be chased this year, why wouldn't you want your 30 best guys on the team? So that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, before we all went under quarantine, I really felt that, you know, with Tyler O'Neill and Lane Thomas and Bader, I just think there was some, I was okay with him starting out in AAA because he didn't have that much time there last year. And if there's anything, you want him to have steady playing time, a little bit more time to develop. So I would have been okay with it. I know how Cardinals fans would have lost their minds, and that's fine. I get that too. But that's where I saw him. So Mark, just to kind of wrap it up here, I want to go to just your thoughts, because right now we're at about the 18-year mark where we lost Daryl Kyle in Chicago, and then we lost Jack Buck, I believe. I can't remember if it was shortly before or after, but it was about 18 years ago we lost both. We lost an icon in St. Louis, somebody who meant so much, and then we lost one of a very young pitcher. I think he was only 32 years old. I went to that game on a party bus. And it was loud as hell on the way up to Chicago. And then we saw the sign outside Wrigley Field with people pouring out, and it said game canceled. So we knew something bad happened. Day before, cell phones and all the instant access we have to news didn't exist on the level it exists now. And nobody knew until we got home. It was a quiet bus trip home, but a very, very sad day, a sad set of weeks, really. And we lost not only Jack Buck, but we lost a very young, too young pitcher. But just your thoughts on Jack Buck. MLB Network had aired sounds of the game, and they highlighted Jack Buck all day Monday, and it was Bob Costas did a great job of kind of hosting that show and it really paying a tribute to him. I don't know if you were able to catch that, but just you've been in St. Louis and you know what Jack Buck means to Cardinals fans and really the whole city, but just give us some of your thoughts and personal memories that from him.
Yeah, I would take it on a personal level, as you reference, and just say all through my childhood, that was the voice of the Cardinals. I remember at 12 years old cleaning my room, you know, in Willie McGee's first game, and my sister had yelled at me and said, go clean your room. And I said, all right, mad. I slammed the door and I turned on the radio, listened to the game while I did it. And I'm telling you, I made it almost a joyful experience because I was so transfixed by his descriptions of this young outfielder and how kind of unusual his movements were, but exciting. And, you know, shortly thereafter, you had guys like Pendleton coming up. He was just Cardinals baseball to me. That was the voice that I associated with. I think we all loved, you know, his ability to relate to listeners. And he's just like a guy you're watching the game with and a great storyteller. So funny. I mean, for me, what I like in an announcer, I like a little drier style. I like a little, you know, a more journalistic approach, not an extremely homerish approach, which you see with some of these local broadcasters. And Jack checked all those boxes. He was very professional, totally beloved too. My good friend Jaime Herrin from covering the Dodgers, he's a Hall of Fame Spanish language broadcaster, once told me he would not have gotten into the Hall of Fame without Jack Buck and how hard Jack pushed for him because he adored him and he knew how talented he was in his native language. So just like a guy who's universally beloved. And I think it's cool to see his kids so I mean, I say his kid, he's about my age or right in there, maybe even a little older, to see him having this incredible success nationally and now carrying that name forward is amazing. And the Derek Kyle situation, I was viewing that from afar, but I've covered two situations somewhat similar. And one of them, I covered Corey Lytle and his career in Oakland. Mm-hmm. I got to know him very well. And frankly, I was terribly saddened when he died. Cause I got to know him very, very well. Played golf with him a few times, really nice guy. That was tragic. And I was on, working at the Orange County Register when Nick Adenhart was killed by a drunk driver through no fault of his own, a 22-year-old pitcher who'd just gotten his first major league win earlier that evening. So they're all just reminders, right? I mean, these guys are as mortal as you and I and enjoy their talent and the beauty of what they do on the field, but understand that they're dealing with the same mortality we all are and everything else. And again, just appreciate them because none of us are going to be here forever. That's what I would say about that.
Yeah, I know with Darryl Kyle, to me, just, and I know the timing of this doesn't line up perfectly, but for me, growing up and just getting out of the military and being able to follow baseball closely again, Darryl Kyle started that line of succession all the way to Adam Wainwright with those staff aces, those big tall right-handers that just, mm-hmm. kind of dominated on the mound and really commanded a lot of respect. And it started with Darryl Kyle and of course went passed on to Chris Carpenter and then Adam Wainwright. So a great era under Dave Duncan to be able to, deal him out of Colorado, get him into St. Louis. And, that's the Cardinals formula, right? Get those guys into St. Louis and most of them don't want to leave. So, and that was certainly right in the middle of that era. But Mark, I know that you've got somewhere to go and I want to thank you so much for just sharing some of your thoughts. And it was great to talk to you again. Where can everybody find you out there on Twitter and what can we expect next from you at The Athletic?
Yeah, so it's at Mark A. Saxon on Twitter. And, I've got a story basically in the bank. It's kind of a Cardinals fan's guide to back to baseball. We're just waiting. I'm waiting for my baseball editor to kind of give the go ahead. We're just waiting for something a little more official, and then I'll have a lot of details in there that I think will be fun for people to jump onto. And meanwhile, until they're actually playing, I'll just continue to churn out some content that I can come up with in creative ways. And I'm really thankful to all of our subscribers and readers. And thanks for having me on the show and kind of keeping me in part of the community and with Cardinals fans. And it's something I really enjoy doing, Ron. And you do a great job. And again, keep me in your Rolodex because I'll be happy to come on whenever you want me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much again, Mark, and looking forward to that article. That was Mark Saxon from The Athletic. He covers the St. Louis Cardinals. We appreciate his time. Before I close out the show, we'd like to thank our featured partners, starting with Mike and his wonderful crew at Adams Smokehouse. Located on Watson Road, Adams is home to the best barbecue in St. Louis. They do big box orders, catering, and of course, in-house dining. If you want the full experience, head on down to Adam's Smokehouse, meet Mike and the gang, decide from their awesome menu. You will not be disappointed. That's our friends at Adam's Smokehouse, St. Louis. Here's your cue. Make sure to check out our friend at KristenJacobs.com. Dr. Kristen Jacobs would like to remind everyone that every day is Skin Cancer Awareness Day. Make sure to check out her Ooh La La Anti-Aging and Wellness Center. That's our good friend, Dr. Kristen Jacobs. And finally, don't forget our friends at GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. Located in both Missouri and Illinois, if you're looking for the right organization to help your youngster with a game of baseball or softball, look no further than Gators Baseball Academy and their four-pillar system. To learn more, check them out at GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. Okay, to help me close out the show, I'm going to bring on the Infiltrator. You don't know who that is. I have another show that I do, and he's learned to crack the system. He's not been able to break the firewall here at Two Birds on a Bat, thankfully. But I've invited him in briefly to get his thoughts on baseball finally being back, because I know it's torn him apart. He's only had MLB The Show to fulfill that baseball need, just to scratch that itch. And we know that video games don't last forever. They're not real, for one. And I know he thinks he's the best armchair GM out there. I'm not sure that he does legal trades on MLB The Show, although he claims he does. But that's not what I want to focus on right now. I want to ask my son, my 15-year-old, who's dying to get baseball back, how he's feeling today with the news, knowing that we do get the game coming back in about a month from now. So, Braden, please share with the audience your thoughts on baseball finally getting back to the game in 2020.
I think it's about time. You know, we've waited too long. I think this whole process is just a mess, and how they handled it was crazy. And I think they got lucky with all the money situation, and they're still going to be the first sport back. It's almost like they hit the jackpot when they really shouldn't have, and they got so lucky. I mean, aside from golf, obviously, they're not going to be the first sport back, but they're still a week ahead of the NBA coming back, which you're still going to have viewers up that during spring training and during that week or two before the NBA. They got lucky. To me, they really dodged the bullet. And if this situation ever comes up again, or in 2022 when they have another negotiation, they can't screw around like this again, because they're not going to get lucky like they did again, or there's going to be, if they screw it up one more time like they did, there might be a strike just like in 1994.
Yes, and I think you summed it up pretty well. They dodged a bullet, and I think they do. Now, I don't know that they would have been able to get any more games in just because of the situation with the coronavirus. I don't know that more games would have been able to get put on the calendar, but we sure could have settled this, it feels like, weeks ago, if not a month or two ago, that they could have had a plan in place. But you know what? I don't want to focus on that. All I want to focus on at this point is that we're actually going to have games now in 2020. And for the first time, for a while now, I've been very worried that baseball would miss out entirely on 2020. And that would impact the future health of the game, which was a deep concern of mine. And but you know what? We have it back. It's 60 games. It's going to be short. It's going to be intense. But I think it'll be a very good thing. And we'll see, you know, when both sides can come together and at least agree on something, anything, even safety protocols at this point, even though the deals were rejected both ways. I think there could be some good out of this. Just hopefully it's not a prelude to a major battle in the offseason after the 2021 year ends. And so I would like to see the sides come together, even preemptively, on some things they disagree on. So I think it's a positive sign. It's good news. And I'm looking forward to baseball coming back. Now, let me ask you, in a shortened season, Braden, and this is how we'll end our time with you on here. In a shortened season, we have a pretty tough division if you think about it. You know, we've got the Cardinals, we've got the Cubs. We always count the Brewers out, but somehow they're always still there. The Reds in the offseason arguably improved themselves the most out of all the National League Central teams. So it could be a very interesting race. I mean, look, in 60 games, anything can happen. And, you know, a lot of the times we don't look until late May or even June before we really assess the strengths and weaknesses and the needs of a team. I don't know if we'll have that much time in 2020. But how are you feeling about the Cardinals' chances?
Well, here's my take on it. Last year, it was a three-team race. And it was neck and neck all until about September, when it was a two-team race with the Cardinals and the Cubs took there till the end. The heck, okay, I don't know why my thing's going off. But, there we go. And, so it was a three-team race last year with the Cubs and the Cardinals. And you think of it now with the Reds making improvement, it's a four-team race, which is... So I think the division is going to be even harder. And you think of lack of playing, and you don't know who's going to come out hot or who's going to come out cold, because both teams, you know, all the teams haven't played in a long time. There might be a team like, say, the Cubs might come out smoking hot, and, you know, the Cardinals or the Brewers or the Reds, they might come out rusty for not playing. I mean, to me, for the division and who's going to win between the Reds, Cardinals, Cubs, and Brewers, I just think it's a matter of who starts off hot, because 60 games, you can't come out cold and then start to come out late in the stretch and expect to win the division. I just think it's a matter of who gets off to the best start.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you because, you know, the interesting wrinkle here is, and Mark and I were talking earlier, and neither of us really knew what the trade deadline was going to be because typically we know it's at the end of July, if not like a day or two into August, and now it's going to be August 31st. So they're going to get a little over a month in before that deadline settles in. And so, boy, that'll be a really interesting deadline because you didn't have that many games behind you. It's not like you had 4 months of baseball behind you plus a full spring training. You don't have that much time. So the teams have to make a quick, they have to be quick and decisive. And it'd be real interesting how the power in throughout baseball kind of shifts because one of contracts that some of them are I think a lot of teams are gonna be cutting some players or just not picking up options, releasing guys. And then you've got this trade deadline. If teams get off to that cold start that you were alluding to, it's interesting to see what's going to happen here because teams now have to plan and think ahead. When they always do, right? They always do. But now even more so since they've lost so much revenue this year, it's going to be very, very interesting. But all right, Braden, I want you to stick around as I close out here. I also want to remind everybody that you can find us at twobirdsonabat.com. You know what? Click subscribe to the podcast. It only takes about 30 seconds. And best of all, it's absolutely free. You can find us on Twitter at Birds on a Bat Show. You can find us on Facebook. Just search Two Birds on a Bat. On Instagram, you can find us at Two Birds on a Bat Show. You can also find us on lineupmediagroup.fm, home of Yo Radio, the newest streaming platform for your mobile device. Download it today for free. Okay, so I want to get to the last thing here. I didn't get to this question earlier when Mark was on, but it came to me on Twitter at the hashtag Ruffled Feathers. What was your favorite home run from 1998? And this was a question sent to me from Joshua Tripp. Thank you so much for sending that. What was my favorite home run in 98? Well, there was a lot of them. And I'll just lead off by saying, look, I didn't get to watch 61, 62. I didn't get to watch the Record Breakers live. I was out of the country. I was serving in the military. And I only learned about those, you know, a day or two after they happened. I didn't actually get to see any video or anything like that until I was back stateside. I was back to see the last four. So I was lucky enough to do that. Now, not live again because I was in a different time zone. But I was at least in proximity. So while those were special, I didn't see them with my own eyes. I saw two home runs that year from McGuire. I saw one in it was either April or early May in San Diego when they made a West Coast trip. And I saw one there. But my favorite has to be the first series after the All-Star break against the Astros in St. Louis. I went home on leave for a couple weeks. And I saw McGuire hit, it was either, and I don't know the exact inning, but it was late because it was a game winner. So it was either the ninth inning or it was extras. Billy Wagner was on the mound. He was the Astros closer. And he was pretty much lights out. He threw in the high 90s, touched 100 every so often. And that was like, it was rare at that point in time. McGuire connected on one and sent it over Big Macland in Busch Stadium 2. And it was an absolute shot. Now I was there with my dad and the rest of my family. So that's what was special about it, is I got to see that moment with my dad. And, you know, years later, I would get to go to my first World Series game with my dad. And so it was all pretty special. And so that by far, because I was there and I got to see it, is my favorite. The other part of that question is, you know, what is baseball going to rely on next time around? I'm paraphrasing this, so I don't have it right in front of my face, but what's going to get fans back again? You know, what event? And I don't think baseball can bank on an event like that to get fans back to accelerate the comeback. That was a rare thing that happened in 98. And, you know, we're coming off the strike of 94, 95. Yes, that did get fans back to the ballpark and it got interest generated again in baseball. Whereas it would have taken longer likely to get that much interest back into baseball. There's a lot of people still bitter about 94, 95. But that is one of the things that helped. The whole era helped. Right or wrong, we know what went wrong. We know people did things they shouldn't have. But regardless of that, you can't argue that it brought fans back to the ballpark. And it brought interest back to the game. It is a thing that happened. It's just a matter of fact. So I don't think baseball can bank on something like that happen again. That was a very rare thing. You know, things had to align just right. And hopefully baseball is not in a position to have to rely on something like that, because I don't think they can afford to. So that's my very long-winded answer to that question, but thank you for sending that. And keep those questions coming. Remember, when we put out a post pre-show, hashtag ruffled feathers, we'll be able to find it quickly, and we can address it either here on the show or with a guest, or if we miss it all together, we will definitely address it offline with you personally. So with that said, we'll be back next week. Again, want to thank Mark Saxon for joining us tonight. Want to thank my son for taking 5 minutes away from having a conversation with his girlfriend on the phone to share his feelings about baseball finally being back. So I know he's been hurting over it. And we'll be back next week with Craig Mish of Swings and Mishes podcast. He also does fantasy baseball on SiriusXM. He is down in Miami. He covers the Marlins. He'll be joining me next week. And if you remember that name, Craig Mish endeared himself to the St. Louis crowd during the near Giancarlo Stanton trade and the Marcell Ozuna trade. So St. Louis is big fans of Craig Mish, and he is a big fan of the St. Louis Cardinals fan base and the media. Also joining me next week will be Tara Wellman from Birds on the Black. And until then, we'll look forward to talking to everybody again next week. We love you all so much. For all of us here at Two Birds on a Bat, let's go Birds!
Let's go Birds!